している。
So we'll start with the former Llanelli and Wales prop, Martin Madden. He told me how he got back into rugby, having given it up for a while as a teenager, by losing a few pounds to gain a few pounds.
When you were playing rugby at the time, it was just train, eat, eat, eat. But I was doing more eating than training. It was a couple of local businessmen who knew my talent when I was younger, said to me, Matt, you know, be honest, you know, you're a good player when you were a kid. You know, you should be carrying on playing rugby. They offered me a package that I'd train on my own and come to their office every Friday. I'll pay you £300 if you lose weight, and we go from there. Well, I thought it was an opportunity to earn money as training. So what I done, trained. And then, obviously, it went from there.
And, of course, he went on to become a Llanelli legend and a Welsh international. Now, second rows often make great cult heroes, and this man is a great example. Adrian Owen played for Aberavon, Bridgend and Pontypridd in the 1970s and 80s, and this was his masterclass on line-out jumping.
I wasn't the tallest man in Europe by any stretch of the imagination, and I wasn't that great at the line-out. I remember asking Billy James, I said, Billy, I got to get better at this jumping lark. And he said to me, watch Billy Mainwaring. He'll teach you a few tips. So the next game we had Cardiff. Do you remember a fella called Phil Colonas? Yeah. Right. So I'm thinking, oh, I'll watch Billy now. And Phil Colonas goes up in the air and he gets the ball. And I thought, well, I'm not going to learn much by here. Billy Mainwaring is losing all the ball. So the next line out, nobody jumps for it. And Billy has got Phil Colonas around the throat. He's prized his lips apart. He's looking at his teeth. And he says to him, you've got a lovely set of teeth, Phil. Make sure to keep up. And I thought, oh, that's the way to jump. And that's what it was all about. It was just that intimidation, I suppose.
Those forwards ranged up behind, and James is not a decoy. He sent a good pass to Gareth Davis, and Adrian Owen has scored.
You were a combative, all-action second-row forward, shall we say. But by day, you then became an art teacher. How did you sort of marry the two, this sort of all-action second row, and then back into school next day teaching art to children?
You had this made-up persona of playing on the field of being aggressive, or if you weren't aggressive and you weren't fronting up, you were just taken apart. You had to be the normal person in the classroom, well, as normal as you could be anyway. I remember we played the Maoris and got annihilated. The next day, I had my class and I had set up a still life, and I remember the girl Kay Phillips, and I said, well, look, I got a still life today. And she said, oh, we draw an Aberavon, are we?
Adrian Owen, harsh but fair. Now, you could pick any one of Ray Pross's great Pontypool pack as a cult hero. I picked John Perkins, and he gave us this insight on the Prosser years.
The whole setup was inspirational, but it all stemmed from Pross and his relationship at that time with Cobb. We had great players there, don't get me wrong. I mean, Bobby Windsor was a world-class player. Cobb was a world-class player. Pricey at that time was a youngster who was going to become one of the greatest. Those lesser mortals of us, we had the belief that collectively, if we all pulled our weight, we could achieve anything. I realised that the game we played was a little limited, to say the least. We had this reputation for kicking too much, and I remember being up in the Ashton Bar in the club one day after we just put about 45 points on Northampton, I believe, and Peter Jackson from the Daily Mail, he said, ah, you had a good game today, Pross, you stuck 40-odd on Northampton, but when are you going to start playing 15-man rugby? Pross said, well, when I can find 15 men who can kick, Peter.
Well, one of only two current players to feature was the Abervale back rower, Ronnie Kynes. He told us about life as a semi-pro rugby player, combined with a life as a bricklayer.
Yeah, we get up in work up at 6, 7 o'clock. I only have one break because I'm too tight to stop for two. We get home up at 4, 5, straight to training, and then back to bed, ready for the next day. And we train twice a week with Abervale then. We're on our feet all day and you know, shifting stuff about, but still we got to do our own work in the gym and whatever we set to do, you know.
Cameron Regan is one of your back row partners, and I know also he was once an apprentice for you as a bricklayer. What's that relationship like now?
He's still my apprentice. If you're asking that, he won't be too happy. But yeah, he's a great boy. He's one of the jokers in the changing rooms at Abervale. I can tell you a story. When he first started with me, his very first week, I gave him a disc cutter, a petrol disc cutter, and we couldn't get it to start, so he ended up running up and down the drive trying to bump starter. So, yeah, he's not a brightest, but he's a great boy. We do spend, I think we spend too much time together, actually. We're together every day. The only time I don't see him is on a Sunday. And sometimes if I go out with him on a Saturday, I end up with him on a Sunday anyway. So, but no, he's a good lad, and he's a good mate of mine.
Ah, you love him, really, Ronnie. Ex-Wales lock David Waters played 702 games for Newport across three decades, so he saw a few line-out law changes in his time. But his favourite line-out law, the law of the jungle.
Props, stand on your feet, hands in your pockets, trying to jump, you know, or just really just take you straight out the line at your end, but 2 foot out the line. I think it was better when it was close contact like that, you know, your ability had to show through, not how strong the bloke was behind you picking you up. I think one of the worst people I played against was Bob Pemberthy. He had to keep dodging his elbow every line out, otherwise he wouldn't have a head left.
Newport have a much changed side. But here's one man who's been here for 20 full seasons. It's an afternoon to savour for a great servant of this club. David Waters, now 41 years of age, plays his 700th game for the club.
702 games for one club. You played all those games for Newport, but I know you also played for Crawshay's the Barbarians. If there was any game going to open a clubhouse for a charity match or something, you were there. Did you just love the game, love putting your boots on?
Yeah, I just play it anytime, anywhere. Asked my wife, she hated it. Quite a few people said, oh, you must have wished you were younger so to, you know, make a bit of money out of it and all, but I never did that. I've always played for the fun of it, you know, and it's sort of charity matches and things like that. In the last season, Alan Carter and Kevin Mosley were all talking, and we said, you know, this was going to be like the last year where we could have fun after the games and not, you know, have a sing-song and be with supporters and all, because I think once a professional era came, gotten deemed that you could go and have 10 or 12 pints of Guinness on a Saturday night after the game, you had to sort of look after your body slightly better than we did.
Newport's David Waters' lament for lost times. Now, you know you're a cult hero when your name becomes rhyming slang. Ex-Cardiff and Wales fullback Mike Rea became rhyming slang for all-dayer, meaning a day out at the rugby with lots of alcohol. So where did it come from, Mike?
It was on the way to Twickenham. It was 92 or 94, and I think my wife saw it. There was a crowd of students walking up to the ground, and on the front they said, well, on a Mikey Rea, which he was slightly alarmed at, but then on the back was obviously all-dayer. So, hey-ho, it's stuck. Yeah, I think, look, at the end of the day, if you work hard. You know, I was a manual worker. I worked, you know, 7 days a week. Even when I played internationals, I worked on a Sunday sometimes. And then you deserve a beer. And as long as you give everything to the cause, and I felt, by and large, I did that. Win, lose or draw, you know, an hour after the game, I always fancied a beer or two.
Mikey Rea, all-dayer. So now you know where that came from. And we'll finish with one of my favourites. When you think of the sheer size of players today, it's amazing to think that one of Neath's greatest heroes was a fly half of diminutive size. But he more than made up for it with a huge heart and massive popularity. Here's Neath legend of the 60s and 70s, Di Parker.
I was 5'2" and I was 8'7".
So what was it like playing, because you played in the era when, we won't say it was thuggery, but it was pretty tough stuff, and you'd be against back row foes like Omri Jones of Aberavon, John Hickey of Cardiff and so on. How did you survive?
Fear's a wonderful thing. When you were a kid and somebody said the farmer's coming, he was pinching apples, you could run, couldn't you? Well, that was it. The fear thing was thought of being caught. It's not the best thing in life to be caught by an Omri or a John Hickey or a Leighton Davis. I mean, you avoided those people like the plague, didn't you? You know what I mean? It was something that I always looked at myself, Gordon Bennett, if they're going to get hold of me, what's going to happen to me? That was one thing. But the other thing was I was able to play with an unbelievable pack of forwards, which gave me the space and the time. And a brave scrum half, second to none, was Martin Davis. He was a tremendous scrum half. I mean, he never give you a rubbish ball with the back row of Di Morris and Alan Butler and Randall Davis. When I first joined, Randall was under would look after you. If you fell in the ball, Randall would give you a rollicking. That's not your job, you know. He would say, that's not your job. You, the bloke with the button, we, the blokes who do the donkey work. He was tremendous, Randall was. And that made it a lot easier to play.
That was the Neath Pack's drive, which put Selwyn Williams under pressure. Parker, too, capitalising on the tremendous shove generated by his eight.
They were the golden years of Neath in many ways, weren't they? The 60s into the 70s, players like Brian Thomas, Norman Rees. Mm. What was the banter like in
all
that
the banter
side?
Was, Brian was always up to something, no matter where you were. He was a great friend to have, Brian. I can remember Brian going to the Newport dressing room, opened the door, Ben Price was in, and Brian said, oh, God, sent the youth side up here, and closed the door. Things like that, you know. Steve Fenwick always says, like, Bridgend would have more hamstrings pulled on the bus coming into Neath than anywhere else. They were all jokes, and obviously just banter among each other.